Hello, I'm Dr. Scott Wattier.
And I'm Tommy Welling, and you're listening to the Fasting for Life podcast.
This podcast is about using fasting as a tool to regain your health, achieve ultimate wellness, and live the life you truly deserve.
Each episode is a short conversation on a single topic with immediate actionable steps. We cover everything from fat loss and health and wellness to the science of lifestyle design.
We started Fasting for Life because of how fasting has transformed our lives, and we hope to share the tools that we have learned along the way. Hey everyone, welcome to the Fasting for Life podcast. My name is Dr. Scott Wattier, and I'm here as always with my good friend and colleague, Tommy Welling. Good afternoon to you, sir.
Hey, Scott, how are you?
Doing fantastic, my friend. Excited for today's conversation. We're going to nerd the heck out a little bit here with one of our good friends in the insulin-friendly fasting metabolic health space, Dr. Benjamin Bickman.
Yeah.
He had an article in his team that came out in the Journal of Nutrients, and it's a long one, so it's a mouthful. We're going to be talking about food and how to break your fast and how to adapt to a fasting lifestyle. So if you're new, just hold on to your britches here. We'll do a warm welcome and intro here in just a sec. But the article is The Effects of a High Carbohydrate versus a High Fat Shake on Biomarkers of Metabolism and Glycemic Control When Used to Interrupt a 38-Hour Fast, a Randomized Crossover Study. So, out of Brigham and Young University, out of his lab, interesting study. Can't wait to break it down for you. What are the implications? What about fat fasting and fat adaptation and metabolic flexibility and all of these things? We're going to get into it. But first and foremost, if you're new, welcome into the Fasting for Life podcast. If you want to know more about our journey with fasting and how it's transformed our lives and why we do this week in and week out and why we've developed resources and challenges and why we have coaching, et cetera, is because how powerful fasting has been. So head back to episode one, give it a listen. Short and sweet to the point, you'll know exactly who we are and why we do, and hopefully it's relatable and also, most importantly, encouraging. As we hear from a lot of our long-term listeners, our Fasting for Life fam, as we like to say, or the OGs that have been around for a while, we appreciate you being on this journey with us. There is no end to the journey of health. We are on it. We are in it. We are in it to win it with you, alongside of you. And as our podcast intro says, we want you to walk away with one or two tangible things or action steps that you can put now, in right now, moment of decision. You make the decision, you go, you don't wait, and you start taking action and adopting a healthy, metabolic, flexible, fasting lifestyle, which is our goal for each and every one of you. We want to pull y'all out of the dieting societal ways of the dieting mindset and the dieting culture, which ends up in systemic lifestyle disease and conditions and increased healthcare costs and decreased quality of life and longevity. We want to reverse diabetes with you. We want to have you come off medications together, not medical advice, but it is doable. And we want to do that by breaking down the research and making it applicable and also, you know, a little bit of fun. So we'll have some bad dad jokes, Tommy, mostly not me. And then we'll break this down with you and have some action steps as well, Tommy. So, all right. The effects of a high carbohydrate versus a high fat shake on biomarkers of metabolism and glycemic control when used to interrupt a 38-hour fast, a randomized crossover study. Why did we want to talk about this? Well, really stinking cool when you get into it. We're going to talk about BDNF and GLPs. By the way, GLP-1 agonists are the Ozempics and Wegovys of the world, the diabetes medications that are now being used off-label for weight loss, and the obesity epidemic. And we're going to talk about GIP, right? What the heck is GIP? Well, I'll have Tommy say it later because I butcher it. But why does all that stuff matter? Well, as we try to build our foundational coaching protocols and weight loss protocols and health protocols, as we've helped tens of thousands of people now with the podcast, but hundreds, close to 1,000 clients now in terms of coaching, lose weight, reverse blood sugar issues, et cetera. We always want to stand on the current information that we have, right? So when we look at the length of fast that we use, how we break our fast, how long should my fast be? What's the ideal fasting schedule? All of these questions that we typically get, how do we sustain the weight loss and make fasting a long-term lifestyle adaptation, right? Yeah. All of that is based on research that we have come across, and then anecdotal, and then also now client-based results, right? Mm-hmm. So this article is really cool because it talks about really the sweet spot is where we feel that you get the most benefit when adopting a fasting lifestyle for fat loss and for health improvements, like lab markers, energy, all of those different types of things, right? So this 38-hour fast is interrupted at the 24-hour mark, right, with a shake and mm-hmm. breaking your fast, and then it's followed up with another fasting period of 14 hours. Mm. So we like to talk about fast cycling. What's the ideal fast length? We very rarely recommend fast longer than 36 to 48 hours. And if you do 72 hours or longer, it's more less frequent because that's not a long-term sustainability. We have fasting and we have food, right? Mm-hmm. Those are both equal parts. We need nutrients. We need energy. We need to put that in. But when we're stuck in a fat storing mode, right, then we can't tap in. So that's why we love this study, because it talks about a lot of the things and a lot of the questions that we get, right, Tommy, from day in and day out in messages and emails and in comments, in reviews, and in questions inside of the challenges mm-hmm. and the coaching groups.
Yeah, there's so much kind of wrapped up into what they were looking at in this study that's so applicable to anybody who's, you know, just getting started with fasting or been doing it for a long time, because some of the most popular questions that we get will be, what's the best way to break a fast? Mm-hmm. What if, you know, a lot of folks come into fasting with some experience with ketogenic diets, for right. example, and using things like bulletproof coffee, MCT oil, maybe exogenous ketones. And so we get a lot of questions about Prove those it. Too. Yeah. which would be something like, so I'm fasting and I use certain fasting hacks, let's say, or fasting optimizers. So maybe I can extend my fast.
The biohacking world at its
right,
best.
Yeah. And so, you know, I love the intention behind it, but it's cool because we don't see a lot of research studies that look at some of those things in particular. But if you think about the research setup here that was used in breaking a 24-hour fast and then continuing with fasting 14 hours later, they had basically the control group that didn't break the fast. And then they also had two other groups that did about a 500 calorie shake, around 25% of their caloric needs. And it was either high fat, low carb, or higher carb, low fat, which is essentially asking the question, like, how should I break my fast? Is there a physiological difference? But then also for the high fat group, you can take that 500 calorie shake and use it as a proxy for, well, if I was just using some fasting hacks or some fasting optimizers to kind of extend my fast, isn't it not so bad to do that, right? Like, won't I get the same net benefit as a water fast? And I would have said, well, I'm not really sure, because I haven't seen a well-designed study for it, but we have some answers now that we're going to talk about. So this is really cool.
It is. So the study overall, just big picture, it aimed to investigate the effects of different fast interrupting shakes, so breaking your fast, on markers of glycemic control, right? And these adults were sedentary with overweight or obesity, right? Mm-hmm. 38-hour fast interrupted at 24 hours by either the high-carb, low-fat shake or the low-carb, high-fat shake. They were equated in terms of calories, like Tommy said. And then the high-carb was 70% carb, 20% fat, 20% protein, 10% fat, right? For the high carb, low fat. And then the opposite for the low carb, high fat. So it was 10% carb, 20% protein equated, and then 70% fat, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So then the third group was the fasting group, like that just continued to fast through the 38 hours, right? And that's going to become prevalent when we talk about the GIPs and the GLPs and down with OPPs, right? Coming up here in a little bit. Man, first bad dad joke. That was me. Dang it.
It wasn't me.
Dang it. All right. So that was not in the pre-show notes. So the cool thing about this is we're going to be looking at the biomarkers in this, because what we want to talk about is metabolic flexibility. There was a study that came out right when COVID hit. It was about, and this was proven through the people that suffered and actually ended up perishing with COVID, the groups that it was most increased mortality in, the elderly, the the metabolic dysfunction, the diabetes groups, the people that had heart issues, et cetera, the overweight, obese groups.
Yeah.
And when we're looking at these markers, it was this metabolic flexibility. They estimated that only 12% of the population was actually metabolically healthy, right? Mm. So that's what we're going to be looking at. And that's what Dr. Bickman talks a lot about. But some of these markers, we're going to look at blood sugar, right? All over the place now. You see people wearing the CGMs, right? We've got beta-hydroxybutyrate, which is ketones. There's three forms of ketones, not the ones that come out in your breath, which is your fat, not the ones that you pee out in your urine, which is the waste, but the ones that are actually, it's not actually a ketone, but it's the substance that we want, that we test with Keto Mojos, that we see in the blood, the beta-hydroxybutyrate, the ketone production, right, as glucose comes down. Then we're going to look at insulin. We're going to talk, they look at glucagon, they look at GLP-1, right, which is the Wegovy, Ozempics of the world, where those are going to make you feel fuller after in between meals, supposedly have improved glucose levels and experience reduced thoughts about food, which are all beneficial, right? Mm-hmm. But we've talked about downsides in the past. And then the GIP levels between the different conditions and the different situations. So what does this mean for you, the average Joe faster? Well, it shows that there are significant differences in these groups between these different markers, which suggest potential metabolic health benefits of a low-carb, high-fat shake or a low-carb lifestyle or breaking your fast in a very specific low-carb metabolic friendly way so you can continue to flip that metabolic switch, which then promotes long-term health.
Yeah. Like for example, if you're looking at your ketones, and you're probably looking at your blood sugar as well, you may
don't
have
use
noticed
the pee strips.
Yeah. Not the pee strips, right?
Please don't.
So yeah. So the pee strips are designed for some, for a completely different application. I personally went through a lot of frustration with the pee strips before I knew that mm-hmm. as well. And I was just, you know, trying to get the weight off and like, why
apologies.
Am I only
that's
training?
Me being a dad of 3 under 7, the mm-hmm. urine strips.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, right? Yeah. But you know, when you, like, if you get a Keto Mojo and you start looking at blood, you're looking at blood sugar too. You might find that as blood sugar starts to drop, as my fasting length gets a little bit longer, you might see ketones start to rise. You may or may not, but it's not always that more is better. But the interesting thing here that we see is that, you know, as soon as these participants broke their fast, then they saw a drop in their ketones, which we would have expected, you know. But when they went through the analysis, what they say is that they basically had a larger decrease in the ketones with the higher carb group, which would make sense. Blood sugar gets to rise. You have this quick, you know, dissemination of ketones that were in the blood. But the interesting thing is that if you compare the graphs and look at the water only ketones continued to rise. So you had no pause in ketones, but you didn't get back to those pre-breaking levels, even though it was only a 500 calorie shake. You may think, well, in a few hours, we'll get back there. That's not what they saw at all. They were still very different from what the water only levels were. And in fact, even like the high carb, those ketones dropped more, but then they actually did basically catch up 14 to maybe, I mean, you could see like they're very much like converging there. Yeah. So maybe in a few more hours, they would have been at the same spot, but still very much lower than the water only group, which is big because a lot of people will use things that are higher fat to kind of extend the fast. But in with respect to ketones, it's not really just paused or extended. Like you really separated yourself by doing a water only versus like a fat supported fast, if you will, like a fat fast,
right? Like a bulletproof coffee fast, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Like a fat bomb fast, mm-hmm. right? Like I'm doing keto and intermittent fasting fast, right?
Yeah.
Which it's very easy to get a lot of calories in when we're talking about fats and MCT oils and those types
sure,
of things
yeah.
and bulletproof yeah. coffees, right?
Calorie dense. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and you know, even Dr. Fong will say, yeah, you can put a couple tablespoons of creamer in your coffee. Well, you can, mm-hmm. but what's the effect, right? So we're talking 50 versus 500 calories here. But like you said, the low carb group then ran parallel with the water fast and the high carb group then came back up and diverged back towards the low carb level with mm-hmm. ketones.
Yeah.
So the best thing you can do is stay the course with a with a water fast, right?
Yeah.
Because you are going to be getting the most increased beta hydroxybutyrate levels. Mm-hmm. And why does that matter? Because when we talk about metabolic changes, you know, elevated BHB and glucagon levels and decreased glucose and insulin, right? So insulin is the thing that takes the energy that you get from food and it either stores it as fat or shuttles it into your cells to be used as energy, right? Mm-hmm. Glucose is the breaking down of your food or glycogen from your body into it, glucose, which then can be shuttled into the cell, into your mitochondria for use as energy, right?
Right.
So when glucose and insulin come down, then, when metabolic changes such as BHB goes up and decreased glucose and insulin, this is suggesting potential improvements in that metabolic health. So maintaining the lower insulin and reducing the insulin spikes reduces the incidence of insulin resistance and weight loss resistance, never mind its negative health effects. And we'll highlight a whole list of things of why managing your blood sugar and reducing insulin resistance is important at the end. But that highlights the importance of these metabolic changes. So the low-carb, high-fat shake preserved most of the metabolic changes from fasting better than the high-carb, low-fat shake, indicating the better way to break your fast and the more potential benefit in maintaining your glycemic control.
Wow. You know, one other thing that I was thinking as I was looking at this graph for the difference in the ketone levels is that if you were to take in a few hundred calories worth of some MCT oil or some other fat source in order to extend your fast, like with the logical rationalization that, hey, I might be able to extend this fast right now by a few hours because I'm more comfortable in the fast. You might be looking at the need to be going an extra 24 hours or more after that extension. So thinking to myself, I might get another 4 or 8 hours or even 12 hours is less than the equivalent of what I just did to slow down my own results with respect to my accumulation of ketones. Like I better go a heck of a lot longer to justify what I brought in, which is really important perspective, I think, because it can be easy to kind of justify something like that, but probably not getting the overall necessary benefit that you would need.
And this is part of the questions we get too, is like, okay, well, how long should I fast? How do I fast? How do I vary my fasting windows? Like what's a weight loss fasting for fat loss? And you can grab the blueprint. It's in the show notes, the blueprint to fasting for fat loss. Mm-hmm. Gives you different fasting windows, different variations, a little bit of the science, a little bit of the what, why, who, what, when, where, and why to fasting and what we believe. 20-page PDF. It's free. We'll zip it over to your inbox. But I want to really highlight here is like when we get these questions about Keto Mojo, okay, well, what I'm starting to get my ketone readings and what's the ideal for fat loss? And I'm doing a longer fast, but I'm kicked out of ketosis in the morning. Why? Mm-hmm. Oh, it took me this many hours to get back in. And you literally just drive yourself crazy. The coolest thing about the simplicity of this is the macro percentages, the timing, and then what that indicates in terms of metabolic flexibility and how to break your fast, right? Mm. And whether or not, because we talk about this, the nuance of, you know, can I have a pickle spear? Can I use LMNT? Can I have stevia? Can I, all of this stuff, right? Water fasting is king for now, for us. Now, some people say we can go down the dry fasting route. Not going to do it.
Don't do it.
Okay, so we're just going to stop there for now, and we'll park for a few minutes and we'll talk. Mm. So here's the cool part. The numbers of the takeaway when put in percentages is really cool. So the water-only fast resulted in 135.3% more beta-hydroxybutyrate. That's the ketone production that we want. That's the one we want. Compared to the high-carb, low-fat, right? Mm-hmm. So then 70% more compared to the low carb, high fat. So about half the result, but still much, much, much better than the high carb, low fat shake, right? So when you compare the low carb, high fat and the high carb, low fat to one another, the low carb, high fat had a 40% higher beta hydroxybutyrate level, right?
Nice.
So,
yeah.
Right. And then when you look at the previous 14 hours past it, right? So you broke the fast with one of the two, or you continued on the water fast, and the low carb, high fat retained the majority of the benefit of that metabolic flexibility when breaking it with a low carb, high fat shake.
Yeah. So food choices matter.
Yes.
Macronutrients matter. Prioritizing or, well, deprioritizing carbohydrates matters and can be very effective, especially if you're feeling like there's something else that I need to improve about my food choices. But those results are also lasting, because if you think about this through the lens of an OMAD, a one meal a day, then you can really look at this.
You only got one shot.
Yeah, you got one shot, right? And then that's going to determine a lot of my physiology, because I've been making some serious improvements in my physiology over the last 24 hours with my fast. And so now it matters, right? And now my body has to decide what's going to happen once I ingest these calories and this fuel right here. Well, your choices matter, and your lower carb, higher fat choices are, with respect to ketones, about twice as good as a higher carbohydrate alternative for the same number of calories. And that's huge. That's so important to know.
And then being able to maintain some of that metabolic flexibility after, right, is really also important. So when you start becoming what we call fat adapted in your metabolic function, the switch becomes able to be flipped on and off more readily, more frequently, improving your metabolic health, right? Not metabolism, but the metabolic health component of it, right? Not synonymous here.
Yeah.
So
not the number of calories that you're burning, but your actual ability to do efficient work with the calories that are coming into the body.
Right. Never mind the stored energy, right, that you want to be able to tap back into more frequently, right? Yeah. Rather than having to be like, guess I'll do another 72-hour fast. And then by the end of the day, you're like raiding the cabinet, right? Anyone else been there? Only me, right? Yeah, so if you're driving, keep your hands on the steering wheel if you're listening, right? So there was one other interesting component to this, Tommy, that I want to list out some of the benefits of keeping insulin in check, right? The calorie in, calorie out model versus the carb insulin model of obesity. Which one matters more, calories or insulin? Well, they both matter. We feel that insulin and hormones matter much more than just your simple calorie in, calorie out equation. When we're looking at this, the GLP and the GIP, you had said something funny that in the pre-show meeting, that made me laugh. You're like, I'd rather take a GIP inhibitor than a GLP-1 agonist, right? So the GLP-1 agonists are the Ozempics and the Wegovys, right? And it's supposed to improve your glucose levels, water fasting, feel fuller after and between meals, water fasting, as your hunger hormones shift, and experience reduced thoughts about food, water fasting, right?
Right.
So the GIP, unpack just for a minute, the GIP inhibitor versus the GLP-1 agonist.
Sure. GIP is something that we don't see studied a lot in a lot of the fasting research, but we've seen it.
You can forget about it after this episode and we give you the takeaway.
Yeah. But it's something that I'm hoping to see more in upcoming research. And I bet we probably will, but it stands for two things actually that, so it has two different names, basically glucose dependent insulinotropic polypeptide and gastric inhibitory polypeptide. So it's doing a few different things. It's a complex molecule. It's doing multiple things in the body, but the important thing to note is that, we have more of it and the communication is much greater as we have more fat cells and bigger fat cells. And even with the consumption of a high fat diet, levels spike and levels stay spiked during states of obesity. So they do have a lot of animal studies looking at GIP-1, where when they cut off GIP-1 or GIP, or whenever they knock it out in mice, then they can actually reverse obesity, reverse diabetes, increase insulin sensitivity. And so what we also see is that in the results of this study in particular, we see a very great difference in what happens with the water fast versus either of the shake situations, where the water fast situation just minimized levels of GIP and they stayed there throughout, and they were basically near zero levels the entire time. But what the body is supposed to do is, as soon as we ingest any sort of fuel, it doesn't have to be carbohydrates or fat, we're going to have a big spike in GIP because we're entering into an anabolic state in the body. where now we have fuel and we need to decide, the body needs to decide, what do we do with this fuel? And so you have this big spike in GIP. And so you saw a very similar spike regardless of which type of shake was ingested. So you had about 80 to 90% of the same amount of GIP spike when a high fat shake was ingested. It was a little bit higher for a high carbohydrate shake, but not very much. And you're talking about a vast difference between the water only group versus the other two groups. And so that's important to note, because it's not just that they were ingesting 500 calories, but depending on how you want to define what breaks my fast, this is one way that you could say, well, what breaks my fast? Well, what did your GIP levels do? And no, it's not easy to measure, right? You can't just measure this at home. But what we can see from the data here is that the GIP levels were greatly different between the water fast and then, and once they broke their fast. And it took the entire rest of the time, the entire 14 hours or so, to come back to those baseline levels. And so that was only off of 500 calories too.
One more thing I want to mention about GLP is that when we saw at that 24 hour mark, regardless of the low carb shake or the high carb shake, or the, I should say the high carb shake versus the high fat shake. I like that verbiage a little bit better for clarity in an audio medium. You saw the GLP-1 spike and then again start to come back down towards one another as they ended the 38 hours, right?
Yeah.
That additional 14 hour window. But the water only fast, and they didn't say this in the conclusions, but it slowly and steadily just kept rising.
Yeah.
And just kept going, right? So again, GLP-1s are supposed to feel fuller after and between meals, have improved glucose levels, and experience reduced thoughts about food without the potential downsides.
Mm.
And you can get that through simple fasting.
Nice.
And that's empowering.
Yeah.
Your body is incredibly intelligent. So optimizing fasting strategies can lead to the improved metabolic health and glycemic control and potentially reducing the risk of the chronic diseases. How do you break your fast? Lower carb, higher fat. What fasting window should work for me? Well, you got to try some stuff out. Grab the blueprint, right?
Mm-hmm.
See what feels good. Try it on for size. Yeah. Right.
Extend your next fast a little bit, you know, from your previous high.
Break a 24 hour, do an OMAD with these parameters, and then go ahead and do another 14 to 16, maybe 18 hour fast. Right. Start stacking those fasts or cycling those fasts on top of one another. And that's what we do inside of our challenges. And that's what we coach people on, how to personalize inside of our coaching program as well. So takeaways, Tommy. So when we look at people who want to improve their glycemic control, or adopt a fasting lifestyle, or figure out how to make this simple and sustainable, right? Results from this study can benefit people who participate in fasting or time-restricted eating, whichever you want to call it, and who want to optimize their fasting efforts for their metabolic health, right? So they even say here, what we'd like to see in the future would be the long-term sustainability of these dietary patterns and their effects on the glycemic control over time. So what I want to end with is reasons why this matters. Why managing insulin and blood sugar for long-term health matters. Because the diabetes train that leads to sickness and lifestyle-induced disease and ultimately early death is a very slow process, right? Operating a system that isn't designed to treat it or look for it or even get the right labs. So why does it matter? Well, diabetes prevention and management, right? We want it. What is it? The ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. What is that? I'm terrible at paraphrasing.
Yeah. Oh, you got it. At least a pound of cure.
So prevent it, never get it or reverse it. Cardiovascular health. We need to decrease the high blood sugar levels because we don't want to damage the blood vessels and increase CVD risk and strokes and all those other things. Heart disease, number one killer in the country, right? We want better energy regulation, which leads to better weight management, which leads to better mood and mental health, which leads to better hormonal balance because insulin is a major player in balanced hormones, not just when it comes to blood sugar.
Yes.
But all.
And the GIP that I was talking about earlier is exactly what determines, or one of the main determinants for how much insulin is getting pushed out of the pancreas. So yep. if we can keep those levels really low, then we can really have an impact on our overall resting insulin secretion, and thus our insulin resistance and our insulin sensitivity.
And when you continue down that path, taking it and going one step farther, then you're getting long-term complication prevention. So maybe you do have some form of lifestyle, metabolic dysfunction, metabolic syndrome. You're somewhere in this spectrum. Labs are a little bit off. Well, you're going to decrease your chance of future complications, right? If you do need to have a procedure or enter into the mainstream medical system, then you're going to long-term decrease your inflammation and increase your immune function, because we know elevated blood sugar has a chronic effect on both of those systems. You're going to improve your quality of life, right? Because you're going to have all of the decreased risk that were just mentioned, and you're going to have better health and better longevity, which is ultimately what we want for each and every one of you adopting a fasting lifestyle, right, Tommy?
Absolutely. Yeah, we sure do. And so, like, taking what we talked about off of this research article, like, click on the link just to take a look at the table. So you can look at these, at this chart. So let those visuals kind of sink in, because they help you whenever you're making your next fasting decision, because your next fasting decision might be, how am I going to break this fast? But it also might be, do I want to end it just yet? Or, you know, maybe I want to go to breakfast tomorrow, or instead of lunch, maybe an early dinner tonight. And would that have an impact? Well, go check out the visuals here, and you can see the impact, or the impact of maybe taking away a recent challenger called it, like, a fasting crutch. She said, you know, sometimes I use fasting crutches, like some MCT oil or something like that. I thought that was a good term for it. And so if you're making this decision, should I use one of those fasting crutches? Well, instead of thinking about it like, let me extend my fast for a few hours, why don't you make a more of a black and white decision, a more of a line in the sand for yourself? Like, okay, if I'm going to break my fast at this time, then go ahead and have a meal, have a nutritious meal, and give yourself the right macronutrients that serve that fast, and make it even easier to go into your next fast, rather than feeling like I'm going to bring in one of those fasting crutches so I can get in a few extra hours, right?
Yep. And that's going to be the second point that I really want to hammer home as an encouragement, is when you break your fast, make it count.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's what I love about this article, is the lower carb, higher fat, right? We like to say moderate protein, right? Prioritize protein,
sure,
for satiety and blood sugar levels. But you're then going to make that next one easier. You're going to make that next metabolic switch flip more quickly or sooner, mm-hmm, or more efficiently, right? You're going to be building that metabolic flexibility and then stacking those fasting results, rather than this on off. Oh, if I just did a long fast, I deserve X, Y, or Z, or I'm going to go back to my old eating habits. Get those repetitions in, but know that that decision and how you do it ultimately sets yourself up for a better, more enjoyable, more efficient, more physiologically sound experience,
mm-hmm,
the next time you set your fasting timer and put some intentionality into it. So
exactly.
Tommy, if they're looking for more support, head to the show notes, click the link for the Blueprint to Fasting for Fat Loss. You can head to the show notes as well and click the link for the Fasting for Life community. If you have questions, you can reach out, info@thefastingforlife.com. If we have not gotten to your question, and it's not because we don't want to, it's just because we get a lot. So shout out to everyone continuing to listen in. Tommy, I appreciate the conversation, sir, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you. Bye. So you've heard today's episode, and you may be wondering, where do I start? Head on over to thefastingforlife.com. And sign up for our newsletter, where you'll receive fasting tips and strategies to maximize results and fit fasting into your day-to-day life.
While you're there, download your free Fast Start Guide to get started today. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure to leave us a 5-star review, and we'll be back next week with another episode of Fasting for Life.